All right. Well, hey, thanks, everyone. I'm James from Runtime, a company that's been involved in Apache Minute for probably about a little over a year and a half now. And I'm going to talk about the genesis of Apache Minute, why I think it came about, and kind of what the industry needs are, and why we're happy to be in the Apache Software Foundation. And then Aditi Hilbert, who I work with, she's going to hop up and dive into a lot more detail. And then we're all available, along with Fabio here. We have a little stand outside where we can go into a lot more detail. So in the spring of 2015, a couple of employees from a company called Silver Spring Networks decided to leave after about 10 years. And at Silver Spring, we've done a lot of IoT work, it turns out, industrial IoT work, where we built communications modules. Largely, or at least starting with the utility industry, we built communications modules that initially went into things like electric meters, and then the networks that we built were good enough to handle a lot of use cases for low voltage and medium voltage networks. And as we were leaving, these communications modules found their way into streetlights for smart city coverage and network fabric. And so what we did is we even designed it down, and Aditi was integral to this, designed it down to the system on chip level. Built our own layer 2 stacks and above, driving two transceivers. One was a 802.15.4 radio that drove a Zigbee stack that we co-developed, and the other, more importantly, was a protocol called 802.15.4G, which was a sub-gigahertz narrowband frequency hopping protocol that we conceived and standardized in the IEEE to get these long-reach, massive industrial IoT networks. When we left, we decided after 10 long years, we no longer wanted to sell solely to utilities or municipalities, nor did we want to build hardware. It's getting easier, but it still remains hard. What we wanted to do commercially was build a cloud-based management and monitoring system. What we found out in the industry was that things really hadn't changed significantly in terms of how people were writing firmware and the tools around firmware, and then how they manage their devices long term. What we found was a huge amount of heterogeneity and fragmentation in the embedded work itself, particularly the upstream management interfaces that you need to kind of effectively manage a device when you're building it and debugging it, but post-deployment when you get lots of them out there. And so that's things as simple or prosaic as a bootloader and how you secure it, or how you lay out in a microcontroller class device a flash image and how you embed artifacts in there to debug it, or how you instrument, if you do at all, a processor, a transceiver or two, and tasks in an operating system and have a standards-based logging mechanism to get that back up on intermittently connected constrained devices. And that's the problem we set out to solve. This is microcontroller devices. And Justin pointed out soundly, we're not talking about Linux-ish or Android-ish gateway-style devices that have lots of megabytes of flash and RAM, but MCU-class devices that have kilobytes of flash and RAM, and they're working their way up and getting better. But how do you manage these intermittently connected devices at scale? And that's really what we wanted to try to solve. So long story short, we looked at kind of lightweight agent or client library style approaches, and that just didn't go deep enough into the end system itself, we thought, to manage it. And lo and behold, we took the long path and decided to build an open source operating system, and that's what Aditi's going to talk about in detail, for these MCU class devices. And we were really happy to find a home in the Apache Software Foundation. So 32-bit MCUs, microcontroller class devices. So one observation is that there's a lot of ARM Cortex-Ms out there. That's the predominant MCU in the market. There's a few other hardware architectures out there that are emerging or have maintained some market share. One of the things that we wanted to do was pick off those devices and make them manageable. We think there's going to be orders of magnitude more MCU class devices. We're talking about things like locks or window latches or doorbells or wristbands, things that have batteries, things that have cost constraints, things that don't have a lot of flash and don't have a lot of RAM, things that can't run Linux, can't run Android, and never will, but are going to be the most ubiquitous devices out there because these costs and single chip solutions are really driving down towards zero. And what we're seeing is, you know, our first port, talk about the BLE stack and what's in the OS itself. The first port was to a single chip solution that had a Bluetooth low energy radio on it. And I think initially these were 128K of flash and 16K of RAM. The next generation was 256K of flash and 64K of RAM. That doesn't sound like a lot if you're sitting in one of these other rooms, but if you're an embedded developer, that's an embarrassment of riches. And the next generation that's coming out is a mega flash and 256K of RAM, and that's just ridiculous. But you're finding these things are driving multiple protocol stacks across a couple of different transports, doing a lot of tasks. You've got enough room to write applications as an end user or as a product developer on these chips, and they really need a real OS, and they need to be managed. So that's what we set out to do. At the time, there were a couple of alternatives out there. And really what we're talking about doing is the notion of all the features that you would expect in a general purpose operating system, all the components, but for microcontroller class devices. And so we'll talk about how we build those together with the built-in package management tool. But that really hadn't existed. There's an initiative from ARM called ARM Embed. We looked at that. We still want to collaborate with ARM, and we talked to the ARM Embed guys quite frequently about where we might collaborate on certain components. But from our perspective, running an open source project on top of a relatively open initiative that's the roadmap's controlled by a company, and upstream changes are not so deterministic, it's hard to build an open source business model on top of that. So we couldn't go that path. Subsequently, there's another OS that's come out in the Linux Foundation. We think it's somewhat compatible with some of our philosophies, and we do collaborate there. But we think we're the first kind of open source project, and we're happy to be in the ESF doing it, that's really kind of general purpose OS. All the things that when you download a Linux, you expect to have a TCP/IP stack or different transports, different drivers, flash file system. Surprisingly, if you're not accustomed to it, you don't get those in the embedded world. You have to go and find these things, write them yourself, stitch them together, and you wind up doing things over and over again, and you wind up maintaining your own bespoke operating system for every SKU and every product that you build. And that's what we did at Silver Spring. Scale, I'll try to move this through this a little more quickly. Justin's slide hit on a lot of slides hit on a lot of things. The IoT products are coming out much more quickly. People used to say hardware is hard. Hardware is not quite as hard. You can do rapid prototyping. You can turn these things around really quickly. But where we think the kind of the dark art is, or most of the risk of a pre-deployment and post-deployment, is in firmware development. The software set of tools on microcontroller class devices is still in the 20th century, and it needs to be brought out of the 20th century, and we need to have all of these components in an OS, all the undifferentiated stuff maintained by a community, which is where that belongs. And so that's what DV will be talking about there. When we talk about scale, it's the management hooks of all these prosaic things that I was talking about, bootloaders and how you secure them in a consistent way, the way you lay out an image, the way you manage all the objects as if you would a server in a data center, but for an intermittently connected light bulb or lock or wristband. Development and maintenance we talked about, and then security is going to be very key, and I think Didi will talk a little bit about kind of the device lifecycle side of it and going from manufacturing images, establishing identity and your credentials early on, and making sure that product developers have a consistent way of building security in, whether they use hardware security or not. We want to have a framework that's there for all of that. I talked about the ASF, I talked about ARM, and the Linux Foundation initiative called the Zephyr Project. And what we think is the ASF is kind of the perfect home here. Because what you have, when I cited ARM, and we really respect their work, and we aim to collaborate where we can with them, what we think is a meritocratic place with the ASF way, the Apache way, is the right place to build an operating system. So oftentimes, what you see in other organizations is people writing $100,000 checks into a bespoke governance system for the warm comfort of a board seat and the privilege of fighting with their competitors. We think that there's a lot of constituents out there for operating systems whether it's cloud providers, the intellectual property that goes into chipsets, the chip providers themselves, or the end users. You need a balanced ecosystem, we think, to best serve the development of an OS. And I think we're on the right path here. As Justin pointed out, we are still in incubation, but I think we have contributors from every continent, with the exception of Antarctica, and a pretty good diversity of companies involved now as well. So I won't belabor this slide because you guys know the ASF better than I do. And then the benefits of a cloud-connected open-source operating system, and then I'll hand it over to Aditi. What we wanted to do was ensure that all of those upstream-facing management components, the bootloaders, the instrumentation and the logging, and the way the images are laid out, those are consistent and have a good build-in package management tool that developers, I keep doing that, can develop to. And make it cloud connected from the get-go. So Justin also mentioned a lot of the abundance of standards. And typically, when people talk about standards in the IoT, they're talking about application layer transport standards. Maybe they go a little deeper in the stack. What we're talking about is not reboiling that ocean and then having another fight about how to apply a particular data model to a particular transport or application layer. What we're talking about is the fundamental core components of an operating system. And that gets you to the market faster, it reduces risk pre-deployment and post-deployment, it lowers the cost. If you're building a product at Silver Spring Networks when I was there, we had quite a few people who were maintaining the embedded bespoke operating system that I mentioned. So we bought an RTOS from a company called Micrium. Changed it until it was unrecognizable. Bought a TCP/IP protocol stack from a company called Trek. Changed it till it was unrecognizable. There was one poor guy who maintained Ike V2 for about a year and a half. His code never saw the light of day outside of Silver Spring Network. And wouldn't that have been great if there was a community initiative to do all of those things? So that lowers the cost for companies. Ultimately, that trickles down to consumers. And as the chip costs go down, you're going to see more and more IoT things, particularly these microcontroller class devices. And then risk, I mentioned that as well. So with that, I will hand it over to Aditi. Hopefully I didn't take all of your time.
All right. My name is Aditi, and I'm just going to elaborate on what James talked about, just in a little more detail. And I don't have very cool demos right. Any cool hardware that, like Justin showed you all, but then you got a preview of what kind of hardware we actually work with. So, and then you're going to believe whatever I say, right? And if you don't, you can just go to the GitHub Mirror or our Apache code base and see what we have. So what we have here in terms of the OS is a full-fledged OS. It's not just a real-time operating system. The kernel is important. We have a preemptive, power-optimized, multi-threaded operating system. And but around it, we have a lot of other things that make it, that turn a hardware piece into something that can be managed remotely. And so what we have, for example, is a secure bootloader. Typically, you know, the chip vendors, they'll provide you some sort of a bootloader, and then you are wedded to that particular hardware. So what we want to do is we want to abstract that and provide a secure bootloader that can work on multiple, hardware, that can work with multiple OS, actually. So we started with Minute, but now it can work with other operating systems, for example. That's another open source project called MCU Boot. But we started with a secure bootloader in Minute. And it, what it allows you to do is to deploy secure, which is signed firmware. It allows you to update that over the air. And so that's how you can then, you know, make sure that the device can sit in the field for 30 years or 20 years, and you can fix security bugs and, you know, basically remotely manage it. We also have hardware abstraction layers. And to make it easy for you to go and work with different types of hardware. And so the actual drivers, they're often tied to the particular hardware that comes with it. And so then what we did was abstract it out. So for example, if you want a file system, we support multiple file systems. and there is an abstraction layer for file system, and you can swap out the file system as you wish. If you don't have space for a file system, if you don't need a file system, then you could use a flash circular buffer to store your config variables, to store whatever data you want. So you can work with optimized, constrained devices. If you have 1 meg, which is an extreme luxury in this case, as Pace mentioned, then you can have a big file system and then work with it. Then, as you can see in the diagram, we have console and shell. You know, you can output your something that you're talking to, some device that you're talking to. You can output whatever it has. You can see the output in the console or shell. You can have stats and logging. We have a framework to actually do this in a consistent manner. So if you want stats defined for, say, your transceiver, for your Bluetooth transceiver, if you have some other connector, say you have Ethernet, then you can have stats for that. But you do all that in a consistent manner. You can allocate memory in a consistent manner. And then you can, sort of managing those devices becomes more organized and efficient. So the whole purpose is because it's a constrained environment and you want to bring Linux-like functionality in terms of management to these little devices, you have to be very organized. And then, of course, the config and upgrade, we talked about that, and networking. That's a whole layer of different protocols that we can support. We started with Bluetooth Low Energy, and we'll go a little bit deeper into that. But we essentially, it's a fully open source network protocol stack, whatever protocol we support. So if it is Bluetooth, we support the controller as well as the host. So that means with the controller, you can actually control the registers, you can control the scheduler, so you have control over the connection events, so to down to that level. And you can enable use cases that you cannot when you get a soft device or can you get something that is bundled with the hardware, the Bluetooth stack that controller that comes with the hardware. So, and I think I talk a little bit about different types of use cases that we have enabled. We are now moving on to other protocols. We support, of course, IP. We took the LWIP implementation, which is also an open source implementation, and ported it to Minute and added some of our own optimizations in terms of memory pools and buffer management. And then we also have support now for LoRa. That is another, I think you, Justin, you mentioned. So we actually now support the LoRa end device. And then we're also working on the other end, the gateway device. But so it can speak the LoRa protocol. We also then have, what else? We are working, also looking into 802.15.4G mesh. That's a sub gigahertz mesh that is very popular in metering world. These are utility meters. So we are looking at different protocols to enable. And then an overarching concept is the security. So starting from the bootloader, right at boot up time, to all protocol security, as well as general identity of the device, as well as establishing encrypted channels for the communications. Everything falls under the security umbrella, and so you will see security, pieces of security in every what we call package that we have implemented. And we'll talk about packages in a bit. So that's a very high level overview of the OS. What is not included in this picture, because this is an old picture, are things that we added since for example, a sensor framework. So when I talk about a hardware abstraction layer, we have a hardware abstraction layer for sensors. So if you have, say, temperature sensors, humidity sensors, you can plug in the drivers specific to the particular sensor underneath on the driver layer, and then configuring it, enabling it, discovering it is all consistent and using the abstraction layer. So it becomes very easy. So if we support, say, a certain sensor type, the temperature sensor, plugging in a new sensor becomes easy. So, all right, so moving on. This is just slides tells you we are hardware agnostic. We want to support multiple architectures. And so we are not limited just to Cortex, ARM Cortex, although that's the most popular in the market. We also support, so for example, Microchip, PIC32, MIPS architecture. We're looking into RISC-V architecture, and then and this is broken up in terms of the Bluetooth host and controller, because Bluetooth was our first connectivity protocol. But so at the controller level, we have we support the controller for Nordic, NRF51, and NRF52. They're mainly and just to give you an idea, this controller can sit on different types of boards, and so we support multiple boards that actually have this chip in it. We're also looking at, into the controller for NXP. I mentioned security, and this is a little bit more about what we are doing. The important thing here is that we want to provide security not just while you're not just in any one portion of the project, but through the entire life cycle of your project, of your product. So you start at manufacturing time, you make sure that your image is secure, you also give it identity, the device, and you want to make sure that it is provisioned securely. What that means is that the system can understand who it is and can talk to the device securely. We want to make sure that any upgrades that are done to the device in terms of configuration or in terms of functionality, all those are secure, so which means there should be signed firmware images in a secure bootloader to actually verify that it is from an authenticated source. We want to secure the communications so that nobody can tamper, you know, with all the communications with the device. And whether it is BLE, whether it is IPv6 channel, whether it is CoAP, you know, you're running over DTLS, running DTLS over UDP, you want to make sure that all the protocol communication is secure. And having a device identity and having mutual authentication between the device and whatever cloud service there is, you're making sure that the secure channel is established between two authenticated and authorized devices. And then, of course, the data and tamper. This refers to data in transit, not just in transit, but also data at rest. And of course, these little devices, you can imagine, they are, you know, constrained devices, but a lot of them do provide OTP, for example, you know, one-time programmable memory. They do allow, you know, you can have encryption, they come with encryption algorithms in hardware, so you can actually have hardware acceleration on these little devices, and you have to leverage them and make sure that you can, you know, you can enable the security features. So Minute keeps all these things in mind, and of course, and tries to make sure that all these security features, if available in hardware, can be leveraged and used to build your product. And when you build the product right from the prototype stage, you build the product with security, and then you manufacture it with security, and then when you end the device life cycle, you make sure that you decommission it securely as well. So we are trying to think of the entire life cycle. Why did we go for an open source Bluetooth stack? Okay. So first of all, if you have source code, you can do you can debug, you can see exactly what's going on, and people love that. And that is one thing that we have heard from our potential customers and customers now, that they want to get the source code and know and enable use cases that would otherwise not be possible. More flexible architecture. So now we have implementation. We have the Bluetooth host controller. You can run the Bluetooth control Bluetooth stack in host-only mode, controller-only mode, host and controller mode, so you have a lot more flexibility. you have a lot more flexibility in terms of configuration. So for example, you can enable, I don't know how familiar you are with Bluetooth, but you know, you can imagine that there's a central device and there are peripheral devices. So there are different kinds of roles. And then you can configure different roles. You can have, you know, lots of channels. You can have a lot more configuration possible because of the, you know, if you have the open source Bluetooth stack. And then finally, better performance. You can, you know, leverage all the optimizations that we have in our code, in our operating system, and then get better performance.
Can I add one
thing?
Sure. So on the last slide, and it goes to the notion of, you know, by its very different definition, an OS is gives you abstraction across different hardware. And so one of the goals here in going to an OS level is it gives you independence across different hardware architectures and different chip vendors. And if you're using open source stacks all the way down to the controller level, that gives you leverage as a product developer against the chip vendors as well. In terms of leverage, it's price leverage. So typically, when you buy a Bluetooth sock, you buy a piece of hardware and you get a proprietary license binary with that, and you're writing to their APIs. You're locked into their tool chain and their APIs, and the switching costs are pretty high, and that diminishes your price leverage. Now with an OS-centric approach and deep protocol stack support, low bitrate protocol support, we can do it all in software. Now this gives product developers a lot more leverage, and they can switch from, say, chip vendor A to chip vendor B to chip vendor C, and that's better off for the entire community, the product developers, the end users, etc.
Thanks. The next slide is just a little closer look at the BAD stack. You can get a more closer look if you actually go on the GitHub repository and see what it is about. But essentially, we have implemented the entire specification. And now, this is BAD 4.2. We're actually working on, we are almost done with BAD 5. And so that has additional features, but these are sort of the highlights. I'm going to move on in the interest of time. And this sort of gives you a roadmap of you know, where we are, where we are going. We released 1.0 in March, and since then we've been getting ready to graduate. And since then we have added quite a bit of things. For example, BLE 5.0. BLE 5, as I said, we have IPv6, Thread. I think TLS, we support TLS, CoAP, HTTP, not MQTT yet, but we're, you know, implementing that. So there is a lot of things going on. LoRa, we already have an implementation of the LoRa endpoint, so there is no timeline, as you can see here, no fixed dates, but we have moved on since 1.0, and we are actually getting ready for 1.1 release in June, and hopefully we'll be graduating before that. But the takeaway is that, you know, it's a full OS with complete, you know, we approach every layer in the OSI layer, and so it's a full-featured stack that we provide. And ideally, this is all you need to actually make an IoT device and bring it up in the cloud. Okay. So I did want to spend a few minutes today on Mute. So you heard about Minute, which is the operating system. Minute comes with a Newt tool. It's a tool, it's basically a build and package management tool, which is, you know, it's a common concept when you're working with, say, Go projects or some other, you know, application projects. But in the embedded world, it's not so common. But we made a conscious decision to actually work on this tool and bring it, you know, into the project, because first of all, we wanted to work with large databases, large code base, not databases, code bases. And when you work with large code bases, you want to make it composable. You want to make sure that there are components that are testable, modules are testable on their own, so that when you're building an image for a constrained system, you can mix and match, and you have confidence that in what you're mixing and matching will actually work together, right? So the Newt tool helps you test, helps you make modular components, and make sure that the dependencies are all worked out, and they will all work together when you actually pick and choose and build the image. So it helps you work with large code bases. Control, debug, and production. This is the Newt tool. It's not just a tool for making an image during prototype stage. You can actually use the Newt tool to even make production images. So it is a tool that will span the entire life cycle of the product. Okay. So it will help you debug. So now each device, as you know, hardware devices, they come with different drivers, they have different, all these different BSPs, and working with them can be a challenge. GDB does not necessarily just come up and work nicely with all of them, right? Some need J-Link, some need some other tools. So the Newt tool is actually built to understand what debugging tools or what cross tool chains is required for each of the board, each of the hardware. And when you're building the product, when you're writing the application, you really don't want to think about all this low-level stuff. And Newt takes care of that. So of course, somebody has to put it in the BSP and write the linker script and, But the Newt tool can actually automatically go search for the right, debugging tool and then bring it up and make your life easy. So it is really, meant for that. And then finally, in doing all these things, we want to make sure that we can collaborate easily. We have a big vision for this project, and we want different contributors, and we want them to be able to work together. And so what we came up with was this idea that we will have different libraries, what we call them as packages, and these packages could be repositories themselves. It can have versioning information, versioning control. Again, this concept is very popular in, Go, Lang, and all these other NPM. But to bring this to this embedded world and to make sure that we can actually version and release the components, it's pretty novel and very useful. And what you can do is you can link these different packages that are being worked upon by different GitHub or whatever other repositories. And the Newt tool will understand, okay, get the latest from that repository, get the version so-and-so from this particular repository, and it can stitch them together and for you, and create an environment where you know exactly how you are going to, what are the different components that you have and you're working with. And Newt keeps track of all that. Okay. So with that, I'm going to spend a couple of minutes on this slide, on the Newt tool, because I think that is at the core of why MyNewt is easy to work with. It can be fun to work with. If you go and look at our tutorials, we have lots of tutorials on doing simple things like Blinky. We can do complex things like turning on Bluetooth beacons, or that's not complex, that's pretty simple. But doing even complex projects, bringing on some air quality sensor, for example. So there are lots of tutorials on the Apache webpage. You can go there. But before you do that, the concepts of project and package and the repository is sort of important. So projects are essentially a collection of packages. And project is the directory that you create and work in. Okay. So when you use Newt and say Newt new, it actually creates a project, it creates a directory, and then it will put you in that directory and say, now you work with whatever you want to. You want lots of packages in your directory, because without packages, you cannot enable the functionalities that you want. So packages can be thought of as little libraries that will, so for example, enable your Bluetooth functionality, or enable your certain hardware BSP, which is also a package. It will enable your app. We come with lots of sample apps. Each app is a package. So you need some packages to actually stitch them together into a project. Next point is cool. As I said before, projects can be versioned and released. And so then they become repositories, and other people from their project spaces can refer to your project and collaborate. Okay. And And that's the repository where we are situated. And as I said, Newt understands, has the intelligence to understand all these different packages and understand what is an app, which is the application that you want to turn on the target, target being the actual hardware that you're working with. It actually can be a SIM environment too. So it, you know, it can be a soft environment. But we usually work with different, you know, hardware targets. So the app is what you are trying to, application that you're trying to run on the target. And BSP, the board support package, is the set of libraries that you require to actually bring it up to understand what peripherals are on the board. What are the different, you know, does it come with any sensors? Does it come with I2C, you know, CE interface? What are the different interfaces? How much RAM does it have? So all those things, BSPs. What is the flash map? You know, what is the flash layout? So it understands the hardware, all right? So with the hardware and with the software, you actually have a product, you know, a project. Next point is important. Packages can take different decisions based upon system configuration. So we allow system configuration, okay? So instead of touching each and every file, say even the BSP, instead of touching each and every file, we have a config interface, we have a configuration file, which we call sysconfig.yaml. And then in that configuration file, you can say, oh, this is enabled, this is not enabled, this, you know, this interface is present, this is not present. So it, you can, it is extracted out of all the different packages in a nice, neat little file. And Newt can understand all these YAML files and actually build a dependency tree and keep track of what packages, how they're linked, and how they're whether their, you know, dependency is complete. So essentially, it will complain if it sees that some package that you depend on is not available or something is redundant. And that is important. Why is that important? Because you're trying to build a constrained system. You're trying to build an optimized system. So you have to understand whether you are taking up extra space that you can save. So Newt will tell you, Newt size will tell you exactly how much size is being used by each of these libraries. So it's a very, it's a pretty intelligent tool that will help you build a nice optimized image. Just a little bit more about, you know, configuration and, you know, essentially, yes, I talked about configuration, how you can specify all these settings in the sysconfig.yaml. You can allow those settings to be overwritten because, you know what, when you're writing an application, if you're an application user, you really don't know, want to know, mess with any of the packages with the hardware. So you say, as an application user, I want to override all the system defaults that are there. I want to say that I'm going to use this. I'm not going to use the default SPI interface. I'm going to use I2C, you know, and I don't want to go get down into the files at that low layer. So I will just define, I will override it in the target. And then the new create image, that is again, as I said, if you remember, I said that new tool can be used not just in prototyping, but also in manufacturing. And you know, when you actually build a product, so it can sign images, you know, it can take a signed image, it can build a signed image and create a manufacturing image. And now you may ask, what is that, you know, what is, how different is the manufacturing image? A manufacturing image has accompanying material to give you a snapshot of what was at the on the hardware and on the firmware at the time of manufacture. This is important when you're thinking about, you know, 20 years in the field. You kind of want to know what exactly how it was built and what those defaults are. It's like those reset buttons, you know, those little holes where you do reset and take it back to the system default. Okay. So you want to understand, you know, how it was built. And so Newt create image and Newt manufacturing create can create all that information and make it available for, say, the cloud service at the back. To retrieve and use it to manage devices. Okay, so now we get into device management. So far we have talked about how do you prepare the device. Okay, all this is so that you can, I mean, a lot of it is so that you can manage devices remotely. And so now here comes Newt Manager. That's a protocol that is available that comes with Apache MyNewt, and that is a protocol that you can, application protocol that you can use to query, to configure, to upgrade, upload images, you know, do everything remotely. And that you can find in the GitHub repo that is named Nude Manager. We wrote, initially we wrote in the Go language, and that is what is in that repository up there, Incubator Minute Nude Manager. One of our contributors, he took it and implemented it in JavaScript and has a runtime node version. So now you can upgrade your an image on a device from a browser. So we have other options too. Okay, if you don't want to use Nude Manager, you can use more one of the standards that are available, for example, OIC 1.1 framework. This is essentially, it uses CoAP, and it uses constrained binary CBOR encoding to make it these packets really small. And what it does is it essentially, it's a protocol, whatever, it's a collection of protocols to allow different types of hardware to actually publish, to have a URI for all the different resources that it has. And once you have the URI, you can do automatic resource discovery. You can get data from those devices. You can update, delete, notify, you can whatever. You can do all kinds of management of those resources. We're also looking into the core format. This is a constrained RESTful environment. And again, this is a more basic implementation of CoAP. It's essentially just the bare CoAP and not wrapped around in any kind of profile information that is in OIC. So it's a much more fundamental CoAP application, implementation, but it's all the same. Basically, you're running a little mini server, web server on these little devices, and you're saying that, hey, I have these resources, please, send me HTTP-like requests and I will send you the data. So this is what is very useful when we talk about other Apache projects that are collecting, say, streaming data, or querying these different devices and getting all the data. So we can make it available from these constrained devices. And I have repeated the word constrained several times in this talk, so I kind of want to give you an idea of what I mean by constraint. So these are sort of numbers we're talking about. The secure bootloader, for example, is 12 kilobytes. Okay. And when I say a Bluetooth implementation, the entire Bluetooth stack, this is including the controller as well as the host, is 94 kilobytes. Okay. So again, and what I mean by entire is including security and all the different specifications, mandatory and optional. So that's under 100 kilobytes. So that's pretty small. We have even fit a Bluetooth implementation along with OIC and the kernel in 128 kilobytes of space. So this is the sort of size that we're talking about. And then I think these are the references, and it's on Apache, so you can just go to Apache and minute.apache.org, and you can find out all the information. And tomorrow we also have another talk where I will be doing a little more hands-on demo of how to actually build a Bluetooth application. And so that's it. Any questions or?
Hardware
abstraction
layer,
is it
USB?
Not yet.
It's mostly checkouts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we're getting there almost.
What version?
1.1.
With an S for the next version.
So that's June, yeah. End of June, we're targeting. Yes.
I'm doing it, so I am the guy to be.
Okay.
That's it hard, I would say.
And so I'll just say one thing. We're hoping that we're building a foundation that other Apache projects or groups can build on top of. And because we use the word OS, and it's not commonly used in the embedded space, but we think of OS expansively in that we can build these components and using the built-in package management tool. But making the environment much better, for instance, we had a developer from the UK come on and just build MicroPython on top of it. And what that gets you, what had happened in the past, if somebody wanted to do Python and embed it, they'd have to go out and pick their chipsets and do all the how work themselves. Well, now you've got an OS where we're hopefully getting more how support, more board support, and now guys can bring Python, now guys can bring Lua, now guys can bring JavaScript. But you know, there's only so much bandwidth in the project doing the core work. We'd love to have guys come in at the top layers. IDE work is always needed. So you know, when we're talking about embedded, we're not just talking about hows and drivers and sensor APIs. We need help up and down the stack, and the ASF is a great place to be because there's so much experience at those higher layers. So that's really, you know, for us, if we could come out of incubation, we have enough awareness that people come in and contribute, it makes the embedded world, you know, modern. You know, there's these poor electrical engineers or mechanical engineers that have had to teach themselves embedded programming. They could use some modern tools that a lot of people in the ASF are accustomed to. So we hope to get other people on board.
And this whole the project and the new tool, it runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows. So you know, you can work on any environment that you like, you're comfortable with. Yeah.